try to recall relatives' names or what the relationship was, and I can't really ask anybody that knows. My mother always told stories about when she was younger. They lived on the Bluff, which is now where Duquesne University is. And evidently their home was a stopping point for what she termed as greenhorns, that's what they were called in those days, who had just come over from Europe. And in fact, she was able to read a Yiddish newspaper and, of course, speak it because of the relatives that came over. And her mother and father put a lot of them in business. There was a whole group of them that went to Steubenville, Ohio, and set up retail businesses. And we used to visit them, too. They're all gone now, too, except for their children, whom I don't even know. So that is sort of a void. Frequently people will say, whatever happened to so-and-so? I really can't answer. But I know that some of them were even set up on farms. And that being far, I think it was because of the something to do with immigration laws that people were tradesmen, perhaps they weren't eligible to come over, but if they were to do farming or something that's considered more necessary, they could. And so some of them I know were set up in farms up above Homestead, as I recall, and I remember visiting as a child up there. And I think we miss something by not having that. Her house was always full of newcomers.
In growing up, I know most of your family was in Pittsburgh. But did you have a closeness with your aunts and uncles and cousins?
Yes. In fact, the cousins, too. Yeah, we still are friendly with the cousins. My mother's brothers either didn't marry or married late. And so they're only in her whole family. Her sister had no children. And the one brother had two children. And that's all from those five littles. And then my father's brother had no children, although they were married. And his sister had two children, and we're friendly with them. We still see them. We were about the same age. They were a little younger than we are. But I recall when we would come to Pittsburgh, we all, it was always a treat to go to their house and play with them.
You had mentioned that you came to Pittsburgh often in the summers.
Yes.
How long would your stay be? Would it be all summer? Or
no. The first time I stayed all summer was, I believe, the year I graduated high school. Maybe one summer before that. And I may have stayed two summers, but usually they were Christmas, Easter, or perhaps 1 week in the summer, about a week's stay, yes.
So it was truly a vacation. you moved to Pittsburgh in 1950, and you set up house, and I know you mentioned your children.
Yes.
Could we speak a little bit more about your professional life? Could we have the address of your office first?
The office is at 5869 Forbes Avenue. I'm on the second floor. And that's in the business block between Murray and Shady.
And you had said that what started you working in Pittsburgh was an uncle?
Yes. I came here not to stay, really, but to remodel a little shoe store. And in fact, I did the work in New York City with two classmates. I think that was in 1948. I didn't come here to stay really until 1950.
You also had made mention that you designed something different for the Tweed Shop.
Yes.
Could you describe what the differences
Actually,
were?
Actually, Little's was different too, quite
okay.
different at the time.
Could you tell us, teach us?
The Tweed Shop, I think at the time, we did it for $4,500, the whole thing. And it was done with diamond plaster lath, some wormy chestnut wood, and a lot of black iron pipe, which was quite different for the time. We even made the lighting fixtures and let me think what else. But the whole concept and everything were quite different from the way stores were traditionally done, because most stores at that time had glass enclosed cabinets on the wall and lots of showcases, and this had none of that. And it was really directed toward the younger set. It was a women's sportswear store. I don't take all the credit because the owner had that concept, not the accomplishment of it, how to do it, but what he wanted to accomplish. And he was an immediate success. In fact, he opened many stores after that and sold to a conglomerate for an enormous price. I don't recall the details, but and retired at a very early age. But we got the reputation for doing things inexpensively and a little different tack than traditional approach to stores. So right away we got other people to work for, and I think in 1956 I started doing work for Jason's, who were a small department store. They had stores in McKeesport, Braddock, and later Monroeville Mall, Southwest Village, and Century 3 and Greengate. We got so busy just with them, but we had a lot of other small stores. We used to do them in Wheeling and Little Washington and Morgantown, places like that. But it was a lot of fun.
Your innovation, was it to take, you mentioned that you, up until then, stores had showcases. So the innovation was taking it out of the showcase and also using different materials for the walls?
It wasn't our idea. It was just beginning to evolve, where allow the customer to handle the clothes, to browse freely around, rather than to have the customer on one side of the counter and the clerk on the other side, and the customer would have to ask the clerk, can you show me this or that? This way it was all out. In fact, some stores didn't even have stock rooms. I remember the Tweed Shop when it first opened. People cleared the racks off in such a short time. I think he had to run back to New York in a week. The to get new merchandise. He was just cleaned up. And before that, as I say, even stores that sold women's clothing had so-called cases along the walls with sliding glass doors, and it really wasn't very attractive or appealing to people. And of course, this saved manpower too, that people could almost pre-select or take something off the rack and go to the fitting room with it. And of course, today that's no longer a novelty. It's the way business is done.
No, but it's interesting to note that it wasn't that long ago.
No, it's, what did I say, a revolution in retail, and yeah, that was, it's still going on.
How is it still going on? I mean, what is...
Well, I mean, it's going on in a negative sense that now the discounters are really running the other people out of business. The bigger eliminating the small, you might say. Unless a small merchant makes a statement with some kind of very timely goods that people want, then rather than a retailer, an independent who just sells what everybody else sells, can't survive because he can't meet the price of discounters. So the people that can survive are the people who, at the high end of things, that can go to New York and select unusual clothing. I'm thinking of women's clothing. And otherwise, they don't serve a need. A person can go to a mall and see the same thing for much less money. And unfortunately, today, even people like Aldridge, Macy, and Bloomingdale's and others are in trouble, you know.
When you redesigned Littles, what was
your
first?
Yes.
Were there many differences there, or many innovative ideas, and how was that?
My uncle, who had founded it, I think I mentioned it in 1936. It was called Samples and Cancellations. He sold shoes largely that were factory cancellations and samples. And then he actually had shoes manufactured to his specifications later. He had a line made in Brockton, Massachusetts. But he was immediately successful, very successful. And his theme at that time was sort of a country look. He had wagon wheel chandeliers and horse collars with lights on them, and they looked like barroom chairs, and it had sort of a comfortable... He thought that because he was selling at a lower price, that the place had to look more like a casual... He didn't want it to be too fancy, but it was colonial. The exterior was colonial. They had little windows with little divisions in them, and a lot of colonial detail. His brother, who took over the store after his death, I don't know what prompted him to remodel, but in 1948, we started to work on it, and we changed it. We still retained the warm look. We changed the front altogether. In fact, it was quite unusual. The glass, instead of having a typical store window, is about waist high, especially for shoe stores. We had the glass go all the way to the floor, open backs, there weren't closed windows. And the shoes were displayed on platforms, freestanding in the windows, and we had brick paving inside the store, and we had lights made out of wood and opal glass, and we even had the chairs made to our design. They were somewhat bench-like, but they had they staggered back and forth. The whole thing had a very informal look. A lot of open display, but no boxes shown. And I think it was quite successful for its time. In fact, the front is still the original front, where the upper part has been changed, but the lower part, with the brick paving and the large outside vestibule and a sign with a sloped post, and that's dates to 48, yes.
Are there any other stores that you worked on in the Square Hill or immediate Pittsburgh area? In the immediate Pittsburgh area?
Yes. Early on, I was very fortunate to do a storeroom in the Alcoa building. It took up the whole first floor, except for the lobby, and it was called the William Patton Gown Shop. And Mrs. Berman and her sister hired me to do the store planning, and that was quite a different kind of an approach. It was salon. Very little merchandise showing, except in display cases, and rather large fitting rooms, and I recall it had marble floors, and it had to tie in with the exterior design of the Alcoa building. In fact, the windows were already there, and they had restrictions on the side of the store that faced the lobby, too. Was sort of a feather in my cap to get that. She also had at that time, this has nothing to do with your interests here, but she had a decorator, a young man, who was, his claim to fame at that point was that he had done Hattie Carnegie's dining room. And he did the colors and the actual design of the cases. He was very talented. The casework. I think I detailed the casework. He made sketches of how he wanted it. And it's interesting, this man later, he was on David Susskind's program, and he was really the best one on it, analyzing the jet set, the super rich, of which he later became a part. He married a lady, Plunkett. It was a Guinness distillery family, and he went on to all kinds of unbelievable projects. But it all started with her store down there.
And what was his name?
His name was Valerian Rebar. R-Y-B-A-R, Valerian. He was a Swiss. But it was a very exciting time. I went to New York City a few times with Mrs. Berman to look at what other people were doing, with the Balters who owned Jason's. I made many trips to New York City, to malls on the coast. We even went to Florida perhaps twice to see what was going on down there, and very stimulating time.
I can tell because you still look excited and happy about it. And you also did some, are there any other stores that you got?
I did a lot on Forbes Street. I did, the Tweed Shop, incidentally, is now the Squirrel Hill Bookstore. I did a store for, one thing that I think is a compliment, if I'm I may say so, is that the fronts of none of these stores had to be changed for subsequent owners. They seemed to be, they had a long life. They didn't become tiresome or out of date. Yes, I did a store for, Frank Marcus, which is now Atlantic Bookstore. I did Bartlett Furs, which is now the Pussycat. I did the front of, where Perlman Optical is, that whole row in there. And I did the one that's now Dale's Maxima, and the one that is the used clothing store there. I did that maybe two or three times for different tenants, but never the front. The front seemed to hold its own. I did Conchetta's Beauty Parlor there, or maybe someone else, but
pretty much taken care of for upstairs.
At the time. Now that's different. If people put a coat of paint on, you know, a new owner, they think they remodeled. But then people tore out the whole works out. And it seemed that, I wouldn't say cost was no object, but it was a time of optimism. And people were willing to go the whole route on it. Today it's quite different. I did work for Raisins. I did a store for them in Westmoreland Mall. I did work downtown. Actually, quite a few.
I'm fascinated. I could sit here all afternoon
what?
And listen
What's
to
that?
What you... I could sit here all afternoon and listen to your project. You had, last time we spoke, you had mentioned that there was a used car lot on Court Street.
I remember that. It was around 1936, I think it still was there.
So the renovations that you're talking about, though, took place in the 50s and 60s?
Yes.
Mr. Kohlweiser, can you pinpoint anything that you are particularly proud of, any one particular?
Unfortunately, a lot of them are gone now. Littles was, I think, a very good job, and the Tweed shop, of course, was. I did that at least two times. It wasn't long before he needed the next room to expand into, and that's the time we put the new front on. But most of them are gone, unfortunately. Jason's are out of business, Asians are out of business, the William Penn Gown Shop, both women were quite old, elderly at the time, and the business is now in Shadyside, new owners. I did some in Wheeling, Kaufman's, not Kaufman's department store, but Morris Kaufman, and Max Horn. I did some work for him. I had Kaufman's and Morris down there. And I think the work I did for Hal Lewis in Little Washington was very nice. I also did, I can't think of the name of it. It was a very large store in Little Washington. And that front's still there. Al Lewis's is still there. Kaufman's front is still there. It's amazing. You know?
It's quite a tribute to you.
Well, I don't know, but it's odd. Usually people tear the front out and start over again every time.
Well, Mr. Kohlweiser, we've run out of time, but we'd like to be able to meet with you again next week.
It's going to be a habit.
You'll get used to it.
What?
You'll get used to it.
It's pleasant. Everybody likes to talk about themselves.
Absolutely.
Is that it?
Would I like
although
to...
I usually don't.
Well, you're doing just fine.
In fact, my family said, why don't you speak up? You never... people tell you all about themselves, and you just sit there and listen.
Well, now it's your turn to go. What we'd like to do is, you know, go into maybe some of the resonances that you've worked mm-hmm. with, and maybe just tie up if we have any other questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay.
Is it for a good cause?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll tell you.